administration of Parliament, the budget of Parliament, things like that. So that part of the work has been taken away from the Joint Rules, the Rules Committee, and the Joint Rules Committee is now solely concerned with the core business of Parliament in regards to legislation and things like that. What is very important to remember is that the committees function in terms of the rules. They draw their mandates from and remain accountable to the House and the Houses that created them. A committee has the power to report and make recommendations to the House or the Houses, but it has no power to make decisions except in respect of its internal proceedings. And that's an important thing to remember. We often find that we pick up problems in the House. When I say we, I'm talking about the House, the Parliament in general, or the Houses, with committee recommendations and reports, for example, where committees have exceeded their mandate to the extent that they are making recommendations which do not fall within the jurisdiction of Parliament, where the principles, for example, of cooperative governance is not taken into account, and they, as it were, are venturing onto areas that really fall within the jurisdiction either of a National Council Province Committee or the provincial legislatures or the other spheres of government. So although the committees have broad powers in terms of being able to summon people and, you know, get witnesses before the committee, call for papers, those kinds of things, they always remain accountable to the House. And when they make recommendations to the House, they must see to it that these recommendations fall within the scope of what they are required to do. Okay, I need to wrap up. I'm not going to go into that. As I said, I'm basically repeating things that board members know. Except to say that we are embarking, hopefully, within the next month or so, towards the end of the year, embarking on a comprehensive review of all the rules of Parliament, both the House rules and the Joint Rules of Parliament, wherein political role players will have an opportunity to make an input. Hopefully Committee Affairs and committees will have a chance to make an input in the rules. And it will be the first, after the adoption of the Constitution in 96, it will be the first, but this will be the first really comprehensive review of the rules after 94, when we adopted the rules for the new Parliament.
Thanks very much for that. I'm going to open the floor to members to raise questions and to have comments. Gary?
Yeah, I think obviously being a politician is going to come with an agenda, and I think that what is, if we're talking about the constitutional mandate of Parliament, I think one of the things that is weakening the Parliament currently is the failure to implement one of the constitutional mandates, and it's section 71, subsection 2, which enjoins which says that an act of Parliament must provide for a procedure to amend unable to pass. And I think that one of the great current weaknesses of this Parliament, and I think the strength of other legislatures around the world, swing quite crucially on this ability to amend the Constitution. When we move on to talking about oversight abilities and power of Parliament and so on, I think the fact that we've not, since 1996, we've not fulfilled that particular mandate to pass it to the Netherlands, and I think this is a great call. It means that at the end of the day, a range of things pass by us, we can ask questions, but at the end of the day, we get swatted out of the way quite easily sometimes. So I just want to underline that.
Thanks for that, Jeremy. I think if you look at the agenda, there will be a presentation on that box in a
minute.
So we will discuss that in much greater detail at that point.
77 and then sub. Yeah.
Without going into the question that the Jeremy is asking, but it goes to the heart of the discussion that if Parliament has a constitution that has all the situation, and it has people who understand what the question that must be asked is why a parliament, what presents parliament for doing that, is the core of the issue. And it provides another question that in as much as you can talk about the processes, you can talk about the structures, you can talk about the committees. So the question that one needs to ask is that to what extent are those structures about are those more forms? you could have a form that you could have something appropriate that they follow that form or that support that form. For instance, to what extent are the deliberations that are taking place within the committee themselves almost subservient to other discussions outside? To what extent are the deliberations the outcome of the deliberations predetermined? Even before people go to a committee. For instance, what is the impact of the political party strength in almost changing the deliberation? Because if there is a position that has been taken by political parties on an issue, any attempt or any form of discussion that occurs there is simply going through a process. It's not literally the core of the issue. So the question that I would like to ask the committee chair of this is that are we really seeing more form or are we moving towards more where we have a successive generation, where the generations themselves can go beyond the position that the party is actually having over the dictators? That is one question that I would like to ask. And two is to what extent, I mean, there's a notion that there's a people's parliament that is subject to the needs of the people. To what extent can the committee confidently state that they have consistently subscribed to this notion of being responsive to the needs of people as opposed to the needs of the party? And again, it's equal to the what their role of public involvement and how strong has that been the case in terms of the committee. And to simply say the public can be invited or there is it's open, that should also assume that it materially happens rather than that it stated that people are not said, you know, they people are not presented, but yes, there are no mechanisms to make sure that they eat the level of involvement. So those are the general questions that I would like to put the other thing, going back to the core of this issue that the Jeremy is raised, because it's a fundamental question that the form is not there.
I think we're
going to
come to that in much greater detail around the issue of the night, but I think it's shaped as a possibility for all that at the time. Jim, you have your hands up, and I think
mine was just a point on what Marina has input. I think the several documents that she mentioned with the procedural development, I think are important for the panel because that will give a sense of how committees are set up and how committees are set up on a multi-party basis. And there might be some challenges that might emerge from that particular. It follows almost to the detail. But of course, when you're a one-person party and there are 36 committees, the National Assembly, meeting on a daily basis, that creates its own challenges. But I think that documentation has to provide. But I think, other than that, I think the chair has made sure there's an opportunity.
Thank you.
Do you have any
questions?
Yes.
We'll leave the manuals issue to one side, maybe, because I don't have a good answer to why we haven't spoken. I think we'll look at that and what's underway in Parliament in terms of that provision. But I wanted to latch on to Steve's point about political parties. Because I think currently in the media and some of the prominent commentators are making this point, I think that political parties are getting a bit of a bad name. And I'm not sure that that's the right direction to proceed. I mean, obviously there's a challenge, and particularly if one comes from a majority party like the ANC, an overwhelming majority party like the ANC. Obviously, there's the potential abuse of a majority. But I don't think that that's the cause of complexity. It's something that needs to be watched here. There's a lot of academic literature about one-party dominant systems or multi-party dispensations, but the one-party dominant systems. I think the more challenging issue, which then relates to the money issue, is the weakness of political parties, including the ANC, vis-a-vis the policy-making process, vis-a-vis the executive. I think that's the challenge. But I think that you will see here in Parliament now, my fellow paying speeches, with concern that there's a degree of robustness, and I think I've seen more and more notes from your party, from all parties in regard to executive issues. And ANC concedes and shares and so forth, but you're prepared to express criticism and some maybe, some of the greater or larger. I think the problem is that the political parties, all of them, are relatively weak in terms of capacity here in Parliament vis-a-vis the executive. So I would like to see the strengthening of parties. I don't personally have a problem with party participation. I mean, then we get into the electoral system we've got. But I think as long as we are PR, 100% PR, as we are, then obviously it's important that we follow the mandate of our organisation to not represent ourselves in Parliament, to represent the party. But I think that the capacity of the party, for me, that's what I'd like to see. So rather than the management of party and party, I would like to see that party a party issue, but it's also a resource in Parliament and strengthening party in Parliament, and therefore the Parliament here.
Madam Chair, on a point of order, could I please ask the speakers identify themselves? The question is identify themselves. I'm John Cable, I'm a member of the panel.
Thank you.
Has there been an effort by the chairman of committees? Has there been an effort by the speaker? Why has the rule of rights not been passed? And if it has been passed, what has Parliament done to get this right, which is the constitutional right that they have?
I think I've been actually asked to actually do the presentation role, because I think it's really pertinent to help the question that I've been asked, and it would help to have a more informed discussion.
I don't know whether it will still be
I think that recommendation is fine. What do other members think? that an acceptable recommendation that we have to present with Mr. Bapela, sir, as he is saying, so they'll deal with oversight and the money goes together, so that we have a more informed discussion on that.
Before you move on to that, I still don't hear, I can hear what Jeremy is saying, and the concurrence that appears to emerge from his colleagues, but he still does not answer the question of this notion of weakness of political parties, and that to what extent is it self-imposed, and to what extent is it self-destruction. If I'm told that I have all this power, and then I go later, and say I'm weak, the question could also be that it's self-imposed. What has Parliament done to deal with that sense of weakness? Because it is aware that there is weakness, but the Constitution gives it a strength, and the fact that it is not happening, because then it's a fundamental question that we need to, all other things will just become processed, and we'll come back here and say we have gone through this, but the problem is that Parliament is weak.
Yeah, I think also, in addition to what my colleague Jeremy Cronin said, that there's also a dimension, and I think we should discuss, where there are these contradictions between the overseer and the overseer, that mechanism of oversight. And then in this regard, you'll find a situation where it depends on personalities and it also depends on relationships that they put to whoever is in the executive and those that are in the legislature. And as a result of that, the type of personalities will then characterize the level of engagement with that particular scenario, where if one is in the executive, I would then treat like these people are asking questions in a way to undermine my area of scope, and therefore, and then the Constitution is very also specific in doing our work to not be engaged in the executive terrain. And what is the executive terrain? What is the executive terrain? That's the Constitution. But in the processes of the implementation of the various levels of deployment, you find that the people get pushing to say they are now entering into my terrain, like approaching whatever money. And the relationship, therefore, issue around the overseen and the overseer then seems to take place, where one undermines themselves, whatever powers that they have, and then the other one uses the powers that they have over the other. But also, it's organizationally related in the sense that if I'm not a member of the Islamic Committee, so get a member of the who am I to ask a very critical question of my mandate? My constitutional mandate to this particular person, and what happens to me thereafter, just a fear of the unknown. And then you find those contradictions, unfortunately, in themselves within some of the programs. But then there will then be others who will then be bold enough to look here and reposition my mandate and try to send this particular mandate. If this member does not change here, he goes away and calls me, whatever the case might be, I'll still be able to stand by my decision, but I was right. So it depends on those particular relationships and some of the contradictions that they're playing themselves. Because you don't have one common understanding on what is oversight, the definition of oversight. And in our work, which I will coordinate in terms of that, it came out quite clearly in terms of what is the definition that is common to all of us as South Africans. Employed people and the other in the village of other people in the province or in local government in terms of the powers that we share within the constitution, but also within the confines of the large political system that exists in South Africa, because as Jeremy said, we don't represent ourselves here, we are representing the large people are coming through the country. And
challenge by national voters by school municipality. I don't think they're going to play that one that day, but being able to execute their mandate, and others being afraid to play that particular play, and not being able to engage and assume those particular issues. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The issue is very straightforward. Let's deal with it. Either Mr. Babela deals with this money, this amendment of money bill, or but you see, we are going into circles now. We're talking channel.
Thanks for that guidance. I think we'll accept that. I think you'll come back to the ability to finish the oversight presentation. We need to do the budget oversight, the issue of the limit to money bill, and we're going to come back to the discussion. And I ask people to keep hold, take questions, so I think it will continue the discussion around it. Is the point of order?
The chair is not a point of order. It is, my name is Connie Sotenda, I'm the chair of Water Business Policy. I just wanted to point out that we can do that, that you are suggesting, but I think we must be mindful of the fact that money goals is not the only issue. It would have been nice if we had done an entire snapshot of what is outstanding. I mean, for example, the financial management of Parliament of the 30 years. Then there's a number of other statutes, older functions statutes that not necessarily are all cleared. So I'm going to require your guidance in that we can move away from this point, but mindful of the fact they are all of those issues, and that somehow we need to come back to it, and maybe we shouldn't get
Thank you. On the presentation on the oversight work that is developed, we have for the past 2 years been asked by the Ground Rules Committee to research and also put together a document called the oversight model. We are now on a draft as of 4th October 2007, 1950, but it still has to be adopted by the Ground Rules Committee itself. But some sections of it already have been adopted in some sections under the title of the one. Some issues that were raised for better work and for better refining. Chapter 4 of the Constitution lays the basis for Parliament power functions, which are broadly described as legislative power, one, secondly, oversight, and thirdly, public participation, and fourthly, forum for public information. And then on the oversight, the Constitution was not prescriptive in terms of what it meant, whereas when you look at the legislative aspect of it, on chapter 75 of the law, it tells you step by step how to process that particular and also in the very elaborative, the chapters that are dedicated to the Constitution, that tells you from here to here and so forth. And they're good, then reinforces the mechanism within Parliament itself. But when it comes to this section 55, which is that one dealing with a particular the oversight, which is section 55, brackets 2, A and B. It then, you say, Parliament
power is to divide. And then the parliament at its own time will then begin to look at its own abilities. So it didn't say which time, by when, but it also says you as parliament, look for mechanisms, and then those mechanisms will provide it. So this exercise of the oversight task team was therefore to then look at what mechanisms can we then bring in as oversight mechanisms that parliament as an institution will then put together and begin to exercise this oversight using those particular procedural mechanisms that and then the NCOP on the same time also, of course, there are two houses, other powers as relating to National Assembly and the other powers as relating to the NCOP Administration 42, bracket 4, and then the subsection 100, 146, 201, 216. So we have to look at the constitution holistically, and then including chapter 77 on the money amendment bill, and then say, here are the functions and the powers that are given to parliament. And if you are to develop any mechanism, what is it that the constitution says? We went out also to speak to those constitutional negotiators in the country and say, in Lassington, because some of the words of the constitution are not here, and what was the intention of this particular process, and then we got information that it was able to help us in reaching position in terms of the mechanism. But also we have to look at the current mechanisms that Parliament has been utilizing. Not like Parliament has not been doing any oversight all along. It has been doing oversight using the rules and the powers and functions to the committee themselves. And that is why committees are able to go out and do certain oversight work while, as provided in the rules, while broader mechanisms are still being investigated. So committees have been continuously doing some work guided by the rules themselves. So issues of the mechanisms that we then are going to be looking at in this just to go quickly into the new one. It is the issue of what we call the government assurance mechanism. Government assurance mechanism, we found that ministers or executives have come to parliament, they answer questions, they respond to the statement, they say certain things within the domain of the house itself. But nobody picks up on those issues in terms of follow-up or external committees and effecting accountability of the executive on issues that they do. And we then look at the margin as far as the Ghana Parliament is concerned, the body committee dedicated to such a function. What ministers is undertaking the national strategy in the House. And we also look at the Indian model also towards that particular direction within Africa and we want to South. The mechanism. But coming to a conclusion, we said, let's not start for a committee for now, but we need to develop mechanisms towards ensuring that all those assurances and undertakings and commitments that ministers raise in the House, therefore, for the mechanism to refer them to the committees to designate a particular line function, but also to have a mechanism as a House, if that issue broad and broadcasting does not reach one line function. So that is the proposal one in the terms of effecting that oversight. Secondly, is that there's this public consideration of issues that is not taking place. So the kind of the system we have is well minister system, which is them and us. There's always been the opposite side and then the opposite side. And then the nature and the way the debate is conducted does not reach any conclusion. It's more about ideological positioning of parties within the domain of the House. And we are proposing therefore that going forward we need then to look at and examine the extended public commissions which have only been utilized for budget purposes for the reason of the budget form. That could then be also be utilized for consideration of issues of national interest. And debating the issues in society, using those so where the rules will be more engaging towards reaching consensus. And then whatever is the consensus that emerges with the agreements and disagreements can get tabled in the House for consideration and adoption. And in that way, Parliament will have contributed to the public discourse and the next day. So that's number two. The number three mechanism that we are also looking at is the issue of the thematic areas of oversight. That while committees have been doing work, a very good work on that particular matter, it's very interesting. We still should not also be focusing on certain thematic areas. So we'll be introducing in the next quarter some of the thematic areas. For example, we want in one quarter to have some millennium development goals collectively by all committees at the committee level, but at the institutional level also to bring in both issues that are broad and cross-cutting that are not line functions related within the millennium development goal achievement. And then begin to assess against the statement that the sub-Sahara will not be able to achieve on those particular goals. But then clear from the executive that South Africa within the sub-Sahara will indeed achieve. And then we need the next parliament and experiment and then tell that particular commitment of the committee. But also related to what committees have been seeing on the ground in terms of the oversight, we come from one area called in Botswana recently, where there's extreme poverty and extreme hunger. And when you look at that type of situation related to the commitment, then begin to say, how is this commitment going to be fulfilled? So the thematic areas are going to be one new mechanism that we put into the systems of parliament. The third is then the strengthening of the capacity of the committee. Currently, committees of parliament are not well resourced and adequately resourced to even perform some of these oversight functions and work. And then therefore, that area of capacity in terms of resource, including human resource, where we have agreed that we need them to begin to look at the additional administrative capacity from committees. We need also to look at what we call content and subject specialists. And then also we need them to look at quality assurance of those reports. Because most reports that come from the committee work, they end up just being noted. They are not being accepted by Parliament. And once a report is noted, it cannot then be processed in terms of referral to the committee. It has to be self-accepted by the House because committees are extensions of the House. So, and the Chairperson would like to call them, they are the engines of the House. But then those engines must then get their mandate from the House itself for adoption of their reports across the way. If the reports are just noted, people must then know that they will then be put somewhere to gather that. They don't even get So we need then to look at those challenges and those constraints within the institution and then deal with the constraint element is the issue of the skills of the people that were employed, then let's think to the core of the issue, but then also internal resources to think what the members will also ask. And then this sectorial parliament, taking parliament to the people, the people's assembly, the youth and human parliament. People speak in those particular forums. But when those issues don't find access to our committees themselves, neither to the plenary of the House, where we are able then to take on board issues as raised in those particular parliaments. And we are also saying therefore the mechanism for empowering the various oversight instances need to also to look at those particular areas. And then in terms of the specific committee work, that while the committees have their own programs and doing work in terms of that, we also want them in the thematic area to coordinate with committees about some of their work. But the issue to that is the issue of retaining the 21 daily responses from the committee. We used to have what we call 14 daily responses after it reported to the committee. Currently, that rule was abolished. So you report, get a report to the committee, they go for it unless somebody or the chair or whoever is the committee follows up. Only then that they get responses, but there's no compliance on the side of the executive. And therefore, I think, just bring back that group and then give it to one piece of response. That once the report has been referred, been adopted by the House itself, after being referred to, and also questions that members raise as individual members, also they need to have a time aspect so that the prompt response, so that members could then report back to the constituencies which raises those particular issues. On the public participation, we said that committees in most are striving towards the improvement of the oversight through the public meetings in Parliament. But unfortunately, it's only those people who are resourced who will then come in, and those people who are resourced also have resources who can plan and prepare. And we honest, we are majority of the people don't have the resources to lead that plan. And then they sometimes when the hearings are in Cape Town, they can't access the hearings themselves. Unless committees within the program that are able to have one or two hearings. And then therefore the issue of resource allocation becomes important that additional resources be given to committees to indeed go out to the people where they are, and they indeed will have sufficient and enough input from the people. But the question will still arise. After those inputs have been made, there's an issue in society that we don't consider those things as a parliament. And then I think that is the area that you need a bit of research to indeed to check whether all the laws that we have passed have never taken on board all the issues. So currently, the general statement that is criticized in parliament, but I'm not sure whether it's scientific. So one has to then look at that particular criticism and not ignore it. And then we'll find out that indeed all the issues were put in place. But at the same time, we are living in a society that is dynamic. If we were to go, for example, the death penalty and the public hearing for death penalty, it will swing the other way where people will say yes to this. But then what is our constitutional obligation? The constitution can say something else. Then, in Lola, because I've been called to wrap up here, the issue of the money bill was also researched. And then I think the Latin make it to but it's part of the model, which has a dedicated section in it, but also a bill proposal for the principles of a bill towards the money amendment bill are also included, and this level will then be detailed on. Then the issue of the realignment of the rules to adopt to the model will also be looked at, and ensure therefore that we are able then to learn. I think that is in summary because of time. I will not then give other examples in terms of
thank you very much for that. But I think in the discussion, Kim has a question to give those examples that she was coming to invite them.
Thank you, Chairperson. As Mr. Labella has indicated, this matter is chapter 8 of the oversight model. And that is why I indicated that it is proper to deal with these ones who have failed to refer out our tax money. Section 77(3) of the Constitution says that all money bills must be considered in accordance with the procedure established by Section 5. Then it goes on to say that an actual parliament must provide for a procedure to amend money bills for parliament. In 1997, a bill of that nature was drafted by the Constitutional Authority for Parliament. And because of the number of reasons, one of them being that it was far to be unconstitutional in that it constrained parliament instead of giving our parliament power, which was the central council. And on the establishment of this oversight council by George Rules, then a focus group was established with a clear mandate of ultimately drafting a bill that should serve for parliament. And I'm happy to report, Chairperson, that we have been drafted. The latest version is that of the 4th of June 2006. But since it is part of a broader oversight and accountability body, it still has to be adopted by the Joint Rules Committee and then by Parliament. It cannot be adopted without it alone. But also, since the focus group was not a committee of Parliament, it was only a focus group. Because the subcommittee of the joint of the staff here. This bill will still have to find its way into the parliament process because it's also been properly dealt with and proper hearing by the committee of parliament once refreshed by parliament. The difficulty chair I have is that I do not know whether since this is a draft bill and the bill to be oversized one itself has not been adopted by the joint rules. But let me say, Chair, that one of the things we've done is to respond directly to what the Constitution says. It sets out a procedure through which money will be amended for parliament. It also separates the two types of money bill. Because in terms of the Constitution, a money bill, if I were also to I know members normally think from time to time to come, at times to forget what the situation is. But the judges are not making sure to tell them what they do. In most cases, you will find members running to the judge to a matter of being on the other side. A money bill in terms of the Constitution is a bill which A, appropriates money, B, which opposes provincial taxes levied to the surcharges, C, which abolishes or reduces or grants exemptions from any provincial taxes levied to the surcharges or authorizes direct charges against the provincial funds. In dealing with this, what we did was that to separate the two, separate the other money bills and the budget, so the budget is an expression of government policy and the other the budget differently. So we have an even longer process than the budget. We have a multi-year budget process where Parliament has an opportunity to influence the budget even before it comes to action. Amendments should only come at the time of the budget. We also have put in place a proper trigger for an amendment to manage it. Because otherwise, it's not just amendment for the sake of amendment, but also that we should find a responsible way of doing that without unnecessarily undermining the process that the administration has done. Amending money bills also, Chairperson, goes to the heart of oversight that we as we need to understand that the Parliament enjoyed by other pieces of legislation like the Public Finance Management Act, which gives Parliament a lot of tools to be able to monitor the budget and the so that it is enforced to be able to issue the things where it wants to amend the budget to be enforced by the legislation, but by a number of other reports, including a piece of legislation which Parliament has power to amend and has never attempted to, which is the provision of the Act. You can imagine what would happen in Parliament if a decision was taken to amend the provision of the Act, because it has been said in the provision of the Act. We would have depended on all the government aid for municipalities, on all the provinces, the budget, and all the provinces. So, the Parliament has performance of this duty in a responsible way. They have a capacity to extend it to other nations. So I would want to submit, Chairperson, that the bill or the draft that is before us is now ready and has already been submitted to the country. And once the oversight model has been adopted, it will be a public document where all the appointed countries will have an opportunity to make this whether it goes far enough to address the issue that we have raised. Chairperson, it also proposes, among other things, an establishment of a budget committee. Not we have at the moment what we call the joint budget forum commission, but we are proposing separate budget committees for the National Assembly in order for us to be able to deal with them as well. But also it proposes the establishment of a very well capacitated budget office in Parliament that will share the capacity that we can only support it on the presence of the government. One ensures that when the foreign chair would like to amend the budget from the expenditure side, we are also able to be aligned to the fact that the entry expenditure is funded by the revenue side of the because we might propose an amendment that adds 50 million to the national budget, but if we are not ready as well as 50 million is going to come from, then that amendment will be blocked. And in concluding, that we share it with you that one province, when they were pressed for an amendment to the budget in 2006, we passed. We do have a province that already have what we call the agreement that I meant by the government in terms of the constitution. And in terms of the Province in Fife and the province in Mpumalanga. It's a one-pager. Ours is for 8-9 clauses, Chairperson. That one-pager, if you look through the budget, I would imagine the province was still under pressure because all they wanted to do to the budget was to change figures, not because they were to correct figures, because otherwise that would be a strength that is central and prior that would be a strength to the executive, but in the absence of the structure. So they passed the piece of legislation. The Chairperson was all upset. Just a reproduction of all the things that we've done.
Thank you very much for listening. We've again got two more presentations before we open for discussion. The next one is by Mr. Sutta from the scrutiny of the university education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chapter. The Constitution is section 31. An exception to that general rule, the executive is certainly would be able to exercise that power. So it requires two through the attention of the strategy and the constitutional law. That has not been open in this discussion. So the issue is about Parliament exercising decision of that delegation. Examples of delegated legislation, as I mentioned, Section 91, and that includes regulations and proclamations. You know, the president exercises that function through proclamation, and the minister usually exercises that function through regulation. But there are other functionaries who also exercise that function, the executive, through. For example, we have institutions like Uganda and other regulating bodies. We wouldn't make the regulations in mind, but we would make rules that would always be held by the Chinese authority. We were asked in 2002, I happened to have chaired that ad hoc committee that produced a report that is about 9 chapters that sought to unpack rules. The 9th chapter came about because we got into kind of extinction arrangements pending a more comprehensive framework. The proposal in the essence of that report says that Parliament must develop a basis for exercising scrutiny of delegated legislation. That Parliament must. So that system will include a set of criteria that will be used to assess whether or not a proposed system of delegated legislation should be sustained or not. The second would be a committee, a structure that would be responsible for reviewing every draft. Delegated to the executive to make that determination. The situation currently is that different private would regulate the legislation. Some would say this delegated if the minister makes a regulation, then it would regulation is not taken as parliament system. Others we have a marriage kind of arrangement. The Interpretation Act, of course, has an umbrella command that all delegations must be tabled in Parliament, and it doesn't go further than that. So the question is whether we should have could be the third primary function, second primary function, to utilize any delegating provision in the legislation. So if an act has a section that says the following matters will be regulated by way of regulation, and then it says the whole day of the session, that committee would crucialize that structure before they close it to see whether that portfolio committee is not giving away too much of what is essentially kind of a part of it for the delegation. And then they advise so that's been a problem for the Scottish Parliament now. In fact, that's been adopted by the Scottish Parliament now to end that process of motion to establish that and to facilitate the implementation there. I think our village is now the detail which we say in the report that I refers to.
My presentation is focused on the support that is provided to communities and the current support and what needs to be improved. Firstly, I would say the division of legislation and oversight is responsible for support to communities of Parliament. And this support is given in the nature of the human capacity, the equipment for committees, the finances, and the station. What is happening is that the support that is provided in the office of the chairperson of each committee, and is provided for the committee itself. I'll start by saying we have a secretary of the chairperson that is allocated in the office of the chairperson. We have a committee secretary that for each and every committee. We have a committee assistant that are put in a pool that are assisting during committee meetings. We also have a researcher that were in a pool, but currently they just completed their recruitment to ensure that each and every committee is going to have a researcher. We have a control committee secretary that is a supervisor in a cluster. In terms of equipment, there is equipment that is allocated in the office of the chairperson. The chairperson himself has a laptop, and then we have a desktop, a plan, and all those things that are listed there. They are given to the staff that is supporting the office of the chairperson. And as well as for the person that is supporting the committee, that is the committee secretary, there is the equipment that is given to this particular person. The committee secretaries are also given an airtime of some of the rents and months so that they can be accessible and they can be able to communicate with the chairperson whenever there's a need. There is also a need that has been expressed by the chairperson saying that they need less jobs in their offices and chairperson. Because currently what is happening is that the chairpersons are having laptops. Now what they are saying, they need their stuff in their offices because some of them are very inconvenient to travel with the laptop wherever you are going. So for their offices, they need a desktop. The request has been forwarded to the subcommittee that is dealing with the facilities for members, hoping that from next financial year they will be able to have desktops in their offices and facilities for members. If I would go to pay you, there's a stationery that is allocated to the offices of the chairperson. And each committee is also given a budget of its own in terms of how it's going to operate for operational purposes. If you come to the challenges, I want to go to pay you challenges that have been identified and come to the support that is given to committees. I think Mr. Capella has already mentioned some of them in terms of that they still have to provide support services to committees of Parliament to be effective and efficient in their functioning, particularly the regarding service advice on dealing with content before them. Currently, what is happening is that the committee secretaries, they don't have that much capacity. I give an example, when the department is coming to brief the committee on a particular matter, there has been no research for the committee secretary of to assist the committee to analyze that document and provide them with the necessary information so that they can go on par with the executive when they engage with that particular issue. That has been identified, and to resolve that, the content analysts are going to be appointed very soon. In principle, that it will approve that they be appointed. The recruitment process is going to take place very soon. I think the advert will be going out this weekend for those people. This is going to be done in a few phases, 3 years, financial year. Firstly, they are going to appoint 15 content advisors and to guide the section we need to political guidance in terms of which committees are going to be given sex preference to be allocated to those people. The other challenge, there is a lack of inter-community communication, coordination and collaboration, and what has been discussed across a number of portfolios. Again, that comes back to the issue of capacity when it comes to human resources that are allocated to committees to assist them. The other funny issue for committees is the inadequate venues in Parliament for committees to meet. Because currently committees are competing in terms of venues, especially big venues for meetings like public hearings, when committees they want to have public hearings. So we need to be able to address that because currently it's really a problem. And then the last thing is the I think I've mentioned already how the division intends to address the challenges, especially the capacity when it comes to content issues. Well, now that the current division has been changed to oversight, to focus on oversight, we need people that will be able to assist committees in terms of content, how will they be able to do that. The content advisors and the researchers for each and every committee. The researchers, the process has been completed already. Each committee now goes ahead of the center, the content advisor, the asset is going to assist with them. Thank you.
Thank you to all those who gave input to the panel and chair. As the next item on the agenda is relations between committees and members of the executive, and that's an open discussion. And I think really input from the chairperson would be most valuable. And then we'll flow from that to questions and discussions on all the issues that have been made prior to the report of our discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ben Kotham, and I'm the new House Chairman. The latest issue laid out, can I just relate this to the previous discussion, where it was briefly mentioned that Parliament is weak and therefore the parties have also become weak. But I'll say that I don't think we want to look at Parliament as monolithic. It comprises of these parties. But then there's also a strategy consciousness in the process, if you look at it. It's justifiable when we deal with other members of other parties. Because that is also derived from the party manifestos. And therefore you would find that even during debates at that time, policy is synonymous with party. When the minister gives a response, the minister's response is also a synonymous to party. But then you find that even if facts are proving otherwise, then there would have to be that overwhelming support for the minister's response. But as I say, it is derived from the party's manifesto, and therefore it becomes policy. But I must say that what I've also observed recently is that there has been a dramatic transformation on the part of the committee themselves. There is this robust debate. They are also now beginning to hold ministers accountable in many issues. But maybe we need to do more in the industry. The other point that I also wanted to mention, which I think relates to this, is what my colleague, Mr. Bapena, said, and I think that is a very crucial point, where he spoke about this referral follow-up mechanism, issues that are coming from people through the parliament interaction with people, or coming from committees or members of the public. I think that is very crucial, because we tend to equate public participation with participatory democracy. So we formulate issues and policies, then we say people are responsible. But in my view, if we talk about participatory democracy, we need to say the process has to be with the people themselves, the co-decision-making process, it has to be co-planning process, it has to be co-implementation, even co-evaluation, monitoring and evaluation of our program. That to me would be then the exact participatory democracy, to me the essence of freedom itself. So I just want to say that I think what Mr. Botero is saying is very crucial for this kind of relation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just as far as our first question is concerned, I think also a perspective that hasn't been given is what one can say the public place of parliament in sort of relation to its internal place. Now, the public place of parliament is a very confrontational one. We see it on TV with the kind of debates which take place in the chamber. It's very grandstanding, it's for public consumption. And I think there's far more sort of participation and consensus within the committee. I think it's we quite often see legislation coming to the chamber, which is sort of adopted unanimously, there's broad agreement. That agreement was found in the committee. So I do think there is accommodation of different party viewpoints, undoubtedly. But of course, each party does think it acts in the interest of the broader public out there. That's how it gets its support and so on. So when policy becomes involved, yes, I think then the party position provides. The other point I would like to raise is, and I see on the agenda, there's also a meeting later this afternoon by the panel with the chairs of the NCOP. But I do think the panel must also give some attention to the whole issue of the joint meeting. The problems which are experienced by the joint standing committees, how they operate, and are they still justified? How, in terms of the Constitution, these joint committees have been established. But there is a problem. There are so many committees, if you take the standing committees of the NCOP, the portfolio committee, and the way that the members are spread between those committees, the way that meetings are scheduled, it becomes virtually impossible to give effect to the mandate of those committees. And I think also the mandate of those committees must be very clearly determined if it is justified that they should continue to exist. Because quite often there's an overlap between the responsibilities of the committees within the NCOP and the portfolio committee of the NA. Then I also think that there's a problem within the structure of parliament. The question is, shouldn't there be some kind of authority, overarching authority, which can in some way synchronize the activities of the NCOP and the NA? either in the form of a Speaker of Parliament and a Speaker's Office of Parliament, or maybe like we had in 1994, a Chief Whip of Parliament. But I think that what is happening is quite often the two houses of Parliament run in different directions and the necessary coordination does not exist. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair, let me give my additional opportunity to just teach. I think it's important to listen to the chair, but I'll come back later.
I think what we have to issue is the relationship between politics and the leadership. It's essentially a matter of power. And I think we should not complicate it. It's about power. And whose view should we take? And I think that in the experience starting here in Parliament in 1999, it helped with the view of the progressive government. For example, I served on committee for 6 years in Parliament. I left it because I was not satisfied with wasting my time. It was really the opposite thing. The thing is this, that we read the framework. For sure, as though there's a deficit of knowledge on both sides, we read the framework. So, we would have a view, need as a view, and use that the view to listen to what we say. And I think that's the question that I think we need to look at. And it's actually against the spirit of the Constitution. And I think that, unfortunately, it's not becoming itself. I think all of them are those are here. They are not supposed to help us in this matter. No one has commented about the spirit of Parliament. But actually, is Parliament can appoint that elected president. And that the Parliament is the supreme body of authority of the House of Parliament. No one has said that it is the supreme body. No, so it is supposed to be the president. It is Parliament that should oversee the judiciary. It is absolutely do this. The fundamental aspiration of society is Parliament. I think that's the constitution. Any other group is not constitutional. So, and I think
we will probably have some debate on
that. Some people do the same thing. Should be supported. Now, this matter has not been addressed in our society. So, and I think we should look at it. I think when we have to go to fundamentals. If you go to fundamentals and look at the original parliament, if you look at the classical parliament, not parliament, which was the American parliament, which was the first revolution, of course, that started the whole parliament, but of course, it was okay before the French Revolution. If you look at how the American parliament operates. In America, ministers are 67. A senator and MP run the party, finish the class. So people, and I think people do an evaluation of
that. That's
a good example. No. I think that if we were to look at this question, we must go to fundamental. What is parliamentary democracy? What are we going to do? And I think if you do go to the fundamental, I think my view is the same. So I think for you, we have to address that. The problem that we had, I think, with this question is that most of the countries who serve in our delegations have not experienced parliament. Most of the key influential people shaped the culture of the democracy were not self-ventures. So let's not know the concerns of self-ventures, the frustrations of self-ventures, etc. So the ill and there's an overdue centralization, an assumption that what comes from the center is probably correct. And sometimes we laugh at this. You have a DG who comes presenting. And actually, the DG does not know what to do. It's only a chief director who's a specialist who knows So when you look at who knows between you and the minister and the DG, if Apple Shepherd was the type of thing, help to see to the Joseph Minister, he did all that, you are no more. Everything that the generalist, the minister, who also made other things to do, and the DG, who was the generalist. And so who, at the end of the day, the condemned between you and that junior chief director or director, you know, and say that such a person is you to prevail. I think there's something wrong with this. I think for me, separately, we've got in this evaluation, go to the fundamental. What is parliamentary democracy? What's the power issue? And I'm going to give the power to this for parliamentary
democracy.
Thank you.
Well, there's a number of decisions that I'm relying on.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to indicate that from the Constitution, there may be a bit of a complication. As you know, the Constitution is clear, as I said in earlier, that the Parliament law fundamentally has legislature. But the very same constitution says that national policy is determined by the national executive. Now, what is legislation other than the legal incarnation of policy, if you like? So the question becomes, you know, most legislation is actually sponsored by the executive. Informed by policy that has been adopted by Congress. When it comes here, it's subjected to all kinds of processes, chop and change here and there. But where we are going to fundamentally change the underlying policy and content of the legislation, you know, then tensions sometimes arise. I have had a recent experience with the legislation in Silicon Commission. Public domain around children, where the minister has said very clearly, in my understanding, that he's adopted the same approach under pressure from his own colleagues, that he is not going to interfere with the parliamentary controversial as a legislation, and has left it entirely on us to deal with all the media, the hype around it. Working committee finalizing the legislation, going to caucuses, we have expressed particular views contrary to the committee view, etc. But he's left it entirely in the legislative committee. And sometimes we feel more comfortable to caucus amongst ourselves as backbenchers without a minister being there in order to avoid a situation where the minister might come top down upon us, or we might feel that he's coming top down upon us. And only once we have firmed up our own position within the committee at that point, then enter into some kind of negotiation with the executive to say, this is how we see it. If the minister comes with a different view, at least we can engage him as a collective, not as an individual. So, but at the same time, the minister is a member of our study group. If he has majority and in a sense he is supposed to be there at all stages of that. So there are a number of nuances and it's a fairly complex question. I have another issue to raise with the other objectives, and I feel that that would be another question that I cannot over my
thoughts.
No, it's okay. Anybody can follow.
But that's part and parcel of our frustration in Parliament. You must sit in a meeting and then somebody is calling you.
That is part I want to talk about, the support of chairperson. It's not a joke, it's part and parcel. You can find all the chairperson's homes is on silent here. Because we don't have this support that we need. And people out there are depending on us to make it work. The things that my colleague Sita, from the Sita said, it's true. That we are getting this resistance from the executive to say that, no, but I'm senior. I'm more senior than you. And the Constitution is not saying that. The Constitution is talking about separation of power. That you are going to do this and you are going to do that. And that's exactly what the Correctional Service Committee is trying to do. To say that, no, if, for instance, the latest bill now, that bill was before us, and we have said, no, as a committee, we don't like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and we have done that. But the support is very much important. You see, I hear what Mrs. Nene says. But chairpersons don't have to get up support. You go on to an oversight visit, you must go alone. Like all the other members. You don't have that support. And I'm happy that you are sitting in the chair. It has not changed yet, Comrade Brett. It's still the same. We are. I'm telling you, people out there. You know, yesterday in the city press, Matata said something, and very much important. It's true. He said that some of the members, not saying all, are not even having time to read the document. Yeah, people are sending a lot of documents. We need the backup support as chairpersons, we sitting here. We must run from one meeting to the other meeting. We don't have the necessary support. You must sit and read until maybe 2 o'clock in the morning to prepare for the next meeting. It's very much important. I hear what Ms. Mene is saying. But Mr. Dredge, you know, this cries of us. He's now out now. But he knows very well. Oh, that's Mr. Robert Papena. You know that we are crying every Monday when we are having. Oh yeah, that's Mr. Papena. Mr. Joyce, thank you very much. I said very good things about you. That you are, you know our program. You are taking it out. You know very well. But chairperson, I really want to plead that chairpersons must get the necessary backup and support. Thank you very much.
There's a lot of new hands that have come up. I'm going to go through the list of hands that are probably trying to be really. A comment. And then Olifant, Mr. September, Mr. Tutu, and
I was coming on the point of what. Yeah, why can't we give the chairperson make their input? Mm-hmm. And then a panel to come and say where there are issues that were raised, that the chairperson
can't
be. Okay. Let the
chairperson. Can the panel members accept that and then we just first hear from the chair? I think that's acceptable. Thank you. So,
thank you, folks. You said when you said my name on the front, you said it's not a new list. And I apologize for the question. And I promise to make this the last input from my side. I wanted to first of all agree very strongly with
what Lange Minister was saying about the question of power. And obviously it has to be written out as individual decisions. For the moment, we're first of all talking about the rapport between chairs and the executive and the particular ministers and so on. And of course, very obviously between personalities on both sides and so on. But obviously what must interest us is the exact and more institutional reality. And how we ensure what Lange Minister was saying is how we give Parliament its due power to capacity as we can describe the Constitution. Where I disagree with the Trump, it's not a parliamentary democracy, a constitutional democracy. And therefore, we are one of several key powers. But we're probably one of the powerless of the powers. And that's why I talked about the Mangal. I won't come back to that, other than to say that we've really got to, as Parliament, pass that legislation as required by the Constitution before this Parliament ends. We haven't got much time left. We've really got to do it. If that's the one legacy we leave to future parliamentarians and to South African democracy, I think it'll be important. Because that gives us power. And I wouldn't want the same powers as the US Congress has got, because I think that sends us to another set of problems. I mean, you easily get pork barrel politics where local constituencies or states and so on, and it's a politics of bargaining between Congress, persons, and so forth. And I think that in a country facing massive transformational challenges, we would want something different. But we've got to have some powers, even if it's to delay spending on a particular project or, until as Parliament we're satisfied that it's been effectively explained and justified and so forth. So we've got to do that. And then other chairs have already mentioned some of the others. I think it's Max Weber who says that parliamentarians always encounter the executive as rank amateurs. They always ask you in terms of the technical detail and so on. Although Lange Dieter is correct to say that sometimes you're surprised. You discover you know more than senior people in departments and so on. But there's always going to be imbalance in that respect. But we do need to be empowered so that at least we've got some basic information, some research, some capacity, some time and so forth, and we're woefully under-resourced. But I bet you, if we can amend Moneyball, then there will be a great willingness from the side of Treasury and so forth to fund Parliament much more effectively. If we've got the capacity to ask serious questions and to do something about it, then we'll see. So we're a little bit in a kind of vicious cycle at the moment. Because we don't have the power, we're not taken seriously, and it becomes very difficult. And we don't take ourselves seriously as well. And it's the question of why haven't we passed it? Is it a correct question? And I think we will fail as Parliament to push forward with that money book. I'm really welcome, obviously, the directions that we're trying to move in, and that's what we're prepared to work in about. But we are getting pushed as Parliament in terms of oversight. So there's a swing to oversight, I think, but the discourse has been one of oversight. I think the first Parliament was overwhelmed, Max's Parliament was overwhelmed with legislation and changing every apartheid racial feature legislation possible, as quickly as possible, and that's it. Increasingly, we're running out of lots of legislation, and therefore we're starting to understand that we have an effective democratic role, that oversight function becomes important. But there are lots of forces that a particular version of oversight, often supported both from the ruling party and by opposition parties, and that oversight comes down to a kind of like auditing committee. Government has said, the president in the State of Nation has said, we will deliver X number of whatever. We will go down and check to see if that's happening. That is important, obviously. But it comes down to that, the kind of number crunching, delivery assessment. You get 2 million houses, but you've only done 1.2 or something like that. That is important. But the danger is that it's a very limited operation. And but the ANC will tend to like them because you're not questioning the minister or your policy. What you're doing is you're blaming some local official's lack of capacity or corruption down there, somewhere down below. So it's a safe area, relatively safe. You can have black borders or whatever, or a municipality. And opposition like this as well, is that anti-staling, especially new housing, and one part of it. And they should say, oh, that's what we're saying, and so we should do that. But what gets then obscured is the critical area of policy monitoring and evaluation. So, the theme song becomes the policy to all it takes is just effective delivery, and our job is to act like we But very often, where the delivery isn't met, where there are problems, it has to do not with failure, intensity, or stuff. It's often because the policies themselves are problematic. In other words, as one could expect, I mean, we're in a preventing society, finding out these questions. And so I think it's very important, and therefore what COVID was underlying, I think will give us greater tools. If we start to think of monitoring and evaluation much more oversight, much more in the way that we're beginning to talk about, that it will broaden and make it a different quality of operation. Then, speaking about parking politics, I agree with what Ben was saying, but obviously, you know, that different parties have got policies, and obviously their job is to defend and articulate those policies. But 90% of what we're dealing with, there is no policy. In my experience, there's no ANC policy on the South Train or Monterey, and nor have any of the other political parties got policies on them. They're typically divided, all of them, on those issues, including the ANC. And therefore, there's a whole range of policies which is not predetermined, and because of which there's an important role for parties to play, and you're not constrained. Shouldn't be constrained by the obviously how you approach, in my case, the process should be informed by the ANC broad policy. But there's no policy decision from the political party on the country at all. And therefore a lot of space to responsibility to look at things like that. And what tends to happen is that what a minister or a DG has said is portrayed as being the policy. The policy of the end is like that sometimes the parties are quite important, and policy gets involved with the executive, and therefore what we see to the ANC policy is the next point, and I'm approaching it at the end, is I think another big challenge related to all of this and other things as well, because I mean when we treat it like we're auditing the group, over time, we solve our various problems. Go down and check to see if some lowly official is actually doing delivering, and then we'll blame, directly blame for that. There's also the attempt to kind of corporatize the problem. See that in a number of ways. And once an 18 commission is mentioned, I'm supposed to be critical of something that we're popular with time. So that, for instance, we must move away from the, I'm using this as an example of a way of thinking about politics, which I think is bizarre, but it's a tough problem because we think of all institutions as corporations. What the next commission says is that our paid sales will be revised, moving away from not just general service to evaluation, performance evaluation. Now, how on earth do you do that? That our political party should evaluate us, and that from every 5 years we should submit ourselves via our list of ways to public evaluation. Absolutely right, we must be evaluated, and we're constantly evaluated somewhat by the media and so on, and that's important. But if some secretary in Parliament is going to check out how many questions you've asked of a minister, whether it's critical or not, how do you do that? But what I'm saying is that there are a lot of forces that try to take this in a paradigm which fails to understand the multi-party character of Parliament and its public representative role. And I think that's something very important. Very last thing. Just a flag, which Bandel will remind us. What we haven't talked about at all is our constituency role. So if we go to the order of get assigned that they're achieved by our political party treatment system. And I think that's a complicated area. I won't go into it, but it's another area which sets the performance of Parliament in each of the committees. Just the last thing, I agree with what was said that in committee, for instance, I mean, the plenary sessions of Parliament are very boring and very predictable by and it's a predictable one, nothing gets done, nothing happens. What's the point of having a committee when it's predictable? But I think that in committee, for instance, you do see the process itself changing and opinions itself. And I think that that's very important. Otherwise, what's the point of having a parliamentary process if the outcome is predicted from the beginning to the end? But I think that I think sometimes you get consensus. But I'm a little bit worried if there is consensus. I mean, part of politics is about certain things different. And not treating it as counter-revolutionary, ultra-left, or whatever. There's difference in surfacing this, and then negotiating the table, if there needs to be between differences, because not everything is a win-win situation, and that's what my hypothesis is. And that's what politics is about. So Parliament should be about surfacing differences as well, and using public participation in order to surface those. And I think a lot of the discourse is about obliterating differences or making differences monumental and predictable. And I think that, again, the parliamentary process itself becomes boring. That's one of the consensus, but also surfacing what are real differences. So that was obviously.
Chairperson, thank you very much. My name is Gosh, I'm the chair of Science and Technology for Cultural Property. Do a lot of research. But I just want to say this to you. One is the point six, I think, is a very important letter for discussion, but very much of a general discussion. How they suggested that maybe look into processes that might have problems in terms of what is the constitutional and imperative of that relationship, because the separation of power is a constitutional matter. So, and the portfolio committee, portfolio committees have got different and various experiences of the EMS. I've just seen how many committees formed. I've been here since 1994, and that's the moment. So, that which knowledge and experience that Comrade Bloom is nodding about also knows very well. So much from the committee to committee. And I have not had the experience that my colleague Comrade Peter had of really just going away because he was the student of the party did not take it. So I'm suggesting that then we should look into processing that matter, particularly ourselves and share, so that we have a common understanding and approach to that matter. Maybe we could even add the judiciary in the process, so that we don't just come to that point where there is a crisis or there is some sort of a disagreement in terms of some court ruling, so that we just understand it is very clear. My last point relates to the matter of management, that I think I must just add by this one of the matter. You know, from 94, I think this was a very vibrant parliament, whereby you would have civil society coming in to present when there is budget, and committee budgets as well, to come and earn their views, and it was vibrant participation, but they kept on bringing the question. To say the constitution provides for parliament to have money in the legislation related to it. Up to 1997, where there was a bill and things like that. But there's been clear discomfort, I think, amongst ourselves and have parliament to actually deal with this matter. I must say that I was saying jokingly, when he was supposed to give those reports, say that no, Mapella must be the penalty for him to kick. I said, no. When it comes to this kind of money, you find out one thing. And I don't know why this matter should be subjected to the draft rules, in fact. It's because of the constitutional matter. I hear what you're saying. Comrade, all I'm saying is that whatever reason why we delay this matter, never been explained. I just know that civil society, particularly a very important federation, Labour Federation, COSATU, said to Parliament in 1998 or somewhere there, or 99, to say we're not coming back here to waste our time. Because whatever we say, you said so called, you said that, whatever we say doesn't help. So,
That's the point I'm making. So the federal money is a real issue. And obviously, I'm just saying, if there are no other things that we don't know about, abstract the center, don't drag it towards the roots. It doesn't belong there. It's nice to be there. So that we finalize the consumer center also as soon as possible. You know, here is what the draft from here was coming there.
Thank you, Chair. Whilst agreeing with a number of issues that some of the other chairpersons have raised, I want to speak about the one issue, and that is maybe we're not giving sufficient attention, and I think we should through the discussion and other processes give attention to the form and structure of the parliament, and whether the form and structure of this parliament is allowing us to give expression to a range of different things, and whether at all, if we say that for an overall, what should that overall be? I think Comrade Jeremy touched on this, flat going and so on. But if you look at all the other different things that are happening in Parliament, on Monday, a constituency day, on a Tuesday, a subcommittee meeting in the afternoon, in the National Assembly, like Comrade Jeremy said, for Wednesday, the afternoon, we do it again, Wednesday morning. Thursday of the party day more in the afternoon it's sitting in the house. Now, quite frankly, the majority of people around this room are being asked to do oversight within the space that I've given to you now. And it cannot be that the structure that is there allows members of parliament to really take care of what is being referred to as function. Because the committee that did it, but actually on Wednesday it's 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. There's no way you can be able to do just about everything from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. Friday is almost a Monday in the parliament. So I think, Chair, we've got to say at this point, does the structure of Parliament lend itself to giving this expression? Because this Parliament is supposed to be the institution that said it was able to allow social cohesion in this country. We didn't have to wait for the Springboks to say social cohesion. It was the only one, and everyone is carrying the flag now. It's supposed to be the Parliament that's supposed to be the champion to these things. So, and then the second area that I wanted to talk about is the area of allowing what is referred to as giving the voice to the voiceless, if I can put it like that. Quite frankly, what happens in this parliament is that if you want to allow people to come to parliament, then it's subjected by a certain amount of money that you can then invite certain people. So when you have many people from the deep rural areas that want to come and talk about why they don't have access to water in that particular area of there, they're not all going to be accommodated because there isn't a budget for them. So all of them come here unless you go into that area, and again you will be subjected to other difficulties. So I think, you know, it's a superficial thing of saying that we are able and we have been able to provide access to the voiceless in this instance, because I don't think we have been able to. It would be very good to see a study of the amount of people that Parliament has been able to access to, really people that have not been able to come to this Parliament before, but really has got some issues to say to this Parliament.
Okay, I wanted to bring in that aspect and really ask that we could maybe bring this aspect in say in the 30 years, the structure of Parliament. Have we been able sufficiently to get out of the Westminster system, let's say questions on the Wednesday and those kind of things, and whether MPC doesn't allow itself to really provide some other mechanisms I support the fact that we should maybe, even if just on Sunday House with individual chairs of the committee might be too many, we could maybe cluster them. And I think a more intensive discussion can actually arrive after the next week.
I want to say all my friends are said by other women or other chairs, and secondly, things I want to say. First, I would like to thank you and decide what's next for each of the things that you have been doing to never look at what's happening. Because some of our structures have been empowered by that program. I don't think that the executive would tell you what to do. I know what the status is for the current. He must just let me know. Secondly, my main issue would be on the issue of the support head that has been mentioned by Uma Mumeng. The problem that I have about this support the kind of people that has employed for the office of the secretary. One sees the chair, I'm 10% of the secretary. I'm not talking specifically about my office, but I'm talking as a chairperson. One feels sometimes that the chairperson's office is a jumping point. Because some of the people that have employed those offices, they feel serious people. And if there is a lexical skill, wouldn't have chairs now that has been employed from their office and television because of their office. Because of lack of support. There is no support. The support that has been mentioned here is misplaced when it comes to the chairperson's office. It's so difficult and embarrassing when you are supposed to run an office, but in reality you don't run that office. Somebody else runs the office for you. First thing that you experience as chairperson, you are told you have the quality secretary, you have this person that is called a secretary to yourself, that is the PA. And then you have a recenter, if any. And then when these people are supposed to go on leave, you are not even told that they will leave. You come one morning in the office, you don't have a secretary, you don't have a PA, you don't have a recenter, you don't have anything. Everybody will leave. That has not been communicated through to yourself. Why? We don't know. So the client says that you are a chairperson, you are running your office, which in reality you are not running. Somebody else is running that office. And chairperson, as you know, that the last thing that we propose as chair that we need to do is the issue of a small budget for the office of the chairperson. Just to be able to run, to buy a card for one of the members of the member. Just a card. You can't in this parliament as a chairperson. And then I say, start thinking about this as well. Each and everyone must have it and put in 5 cents in order for you to be able to to buy a card for those. There is a lot that one can say about this empowerment of chairperson. There's nothing like that. You are not empowered. Somebody else is running those books, not ourselves. Thank you very much. The others are disturbed by my other people. We're not going to lose them. I'll end up by crying as a convener of committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I would like to know, we were given precedent here, we have responded to Chapel, because I don't know if we're going to do it. Yeah, Sabina will connect to a question. The panel has a researcher, we'll be processing those questions.
You know, the problem here, I'm speaking to a person who has my head, that's in the community, he's trying to direct me.
The only thing I know is that the government is finished. For 13 years, we operate with the community situation. In between, in the drive, the new one is working there. And when the new one comes in, it starts to come slow. Not even the information of the city of Gales, but this other particular person is working in that particular place. We'll be able to relate to the back. These were the programs of the community. These are the things that they still did. In fact, there's no information that we get. Most of you said the community creation process. We are really kept very excellent community creation. Even today, we have not yet managed to the parliament to replace that process. Very effective, very effective. Yes, thank you. Now, what informs this so-called support community? Clearly, there's no understanding, not even understanding of what is it that we want to say. When we say this committee, the support for committee, what is it? What is it? We call that support for committee. When we talk of one individual, African, and put into that position, so it's favorable, beautiful, and so it's much better than anything. So these are the subjects, because you see, when we do oversight committee, we come across all the challenges. One example that I did was policy unity. And I know that Parliament was not ready to say about that last week, so the chair of the two of them, who were so best of them, and who were joined, were able to give support to the people of Parliament. To give support for us to be able to take that bill, cut that process, and when the other time they took to do that, the role of the NCOP, the Parliament, and the people of Parliament. But you start from what what capacity does he have? Before he even comes for me, Kuber George operates a great thing like myself. Once I get to you, I understand my own problem in the system. Same applies to Kuber George. Same applies. Something around coming to this wonderful information that you want to come and pass into the parliament. What about the other? Good. Now, I think we need to go back to the drawing board. The method here, I used to be a week before, because there are seven members of the group. The public mic was raised to the delegated decision. I remember when you gave me that money to the plan. That was 5 years ago. You say, that thing is sitting somewhere today, very much, with the adult community or the community. I'm saying there's nothing that's happening. But I think at some point, we need to sit down and determine what is this going to say one successor. And that cannot be done in that responsibility. This thing of notion of having committee section, right? What is woman speaking? The budget of parliament that would address this, it does not. Priorities in parliament is bush furniture. Definitely see my office will change carpet when I'm done. Very good carpet, you can put a carpet in the next element out another. Currently they put something brown like this, so it's never there something. But I'm saying that until we arrive at the point that we understand this notion of oversight and capacity. The issue of politics between chairpersons and ministers, I think we may not deal with it here. That's the responsibility of the party. I think at the party level, they have to engage around the shelter service of the ministers, convened maybe by all our guys who go to the local committee in parliament or whatever that they usually want. That is something that cannot resolve to. Rather than if you attempt to do it again, you can come up with it. By the time you leave this meeting again, you'll be paying to see the minister about somebody else now going to punish them. So I'm saying that that's not even attempting to do it. Let's look at what is it that we want. How we want to compensate the community. So that, 10 years down the line, there's nothing in the legacy that they have left behind. Who the mentor, Chiku, who the first we here before, what is it that they have left behind for those who come in and take over in a more solid foundation that most of them have to compensate? Correctly, they're going down, but not for the sake of zero. See, that's the end of the day, there was this issue of the cell phones that they were. Only the people that shop at the money.
and the men is one of them. Since today, men was given a budget for him to be able to do the fight for 3 years now. Now, our time, they love their friends, but I do have capital, but I don't think no, it's no capital. Therefore, you will be treated accordingly. No, 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 not by you, woman, you may shake your head, but not by you, because I already protect you. Well, they're going to do it. That is because you give administrators to decide for corruption. You cannot have a situation where administrators are the ones that tell you where to go, when to go, when not to go. See, the problem is that people with voice have to approve an executive. And I'm doing it. We have to go to the house. And if we don't do that, what was happening was that already the people were mobilizing the opposition, but just the people of Islam should be the one that goes there and rattles the damage that we saw, the mess that we saw. But likely, it was from the Georgia and the family and that there's a need for this government to go there. But if you have left that to administer, they're not going to go there. And the president was going to be locked in that case and she died in that case. So I'm simply saying that just to ask what is it that stands about for police and that must be considered by the police. And as a result of my instrument.
Was that we would deal with the issue of the relationship and we would also deal with all the other issues that have risen from the previous input and questions that people had done to me earlier. We could continue to develop after the presentations were done. So we were clear about that. I think there was clarity about that. So I'm ready to ask, we're also wanting some interactions between the panel and the chairperson. And I'm really suggesting because we have it's 12:20 now and we're due to break at 1 for lunch. We can shift that if there's consensus on that, but I think what we need to do is to utilize the rest of the time as effectively as possible. We've heard in great depth about the problems that have been raised by the different chairs. The chamber body is the last person in that first round. I'm going to suggest that raise questions and comments so that we can have some meaningful discussion between the panel and the chair. Okay, so it's Rebecca first and then
yeah, I think thank you Chef for submitting Rebecca Cartier and the chair the legal portfolio for me. Mine was two things which are really covered by the members. It's just to make an emphasis on the most sensitive information about the portfolio policy. In terms of resources, really, I think that is very much important. You need more of the resources for the policy. Especially when you have public hearings, you need to make follow-up. It should carry people from some province that we are not able to do this. In terms of the one which is really covered by Comrade Oliphant, maybe layers of monitoring, I think that really should also make an emphasis on each to what the
I'm just worried when countries catch it, they let's look at what makes these things happen, or what are sure that they would say what makes the committee secretary to decide. Maybe as the chair of labor portfolio committee, I can't let you need to know why good people are resigning. We are going to lose good people, and I suspect that people are not being paid enough. I think I'm one of the few chairpersons who has got a good committee secretary. Very few. Good but not perfect. But I'm afraid we are going to lose the good people in the institution. And I doubt if people are being treated in the same way. We really need a page that these people should be treated the same. We don't want to take hearsay from corridors, but we know we can see what is happening within the institution. We recently had public hearings on about workplace discrimination, and we invited submissions from Parliament. But we just got an acknowledgement of the director that we never submitted, because we wanted to know what is happening within the institution. And we are still going to create a follow-up on that. What I'm trying to say here is that though we need support staff, but also let's look at the people we have, the few people we have, the few good people we have, should be treated correctly and should be paid well. So I don't want to repeat on what other members say. But in terms of programming, I think we need to be involved by the programming committee, because the issue that was raised by Colleague September really is important to form a structure of parliament. I mean, really, we are giving very little time to deal with the program of the committee. When you need more time, then you have to apply for the plenary time. So it's important for the committee, for the program to be able to work. Thank you. And
I share the feeling of most of the public accounts who are here to create the affirmative statement. I'm not sure whether that is official or not. Two things for me to say. One, I think it has been an important over the question of the capacity of constitution within the both parties and the member parties. My point here is that these are matters that in almost all meetings of the Committee of Chairmen that they face, but it does appear that we can only raise them, but there is no mechanism of how and forward, or within the structure of parliament, where the chairman's committee are, or how are they taken in as an important component that assists or input in the way parliament is run, since parliament is run to committee. So you have this matter to say on and on and on, but there is no mechanism of taking forward. And while that's where it has been, and it will appear that things move in very, very slow motion in terms of general decisions. I'm not sure whether the problem is truly an administrative problem or if it's a political problem. And it's interesting for me. For the panel, I'm not sure whether you're doing anything to try to find out what that is Salah. How is Salah considering themselves in the context of some of the challenges that they were facing? What extent are they alive to the issue? And to what extent are they able to respond to the issue? And within what time frame? The leaders in there for almost 10 years. Somehow you can't move. Why can't you move? There's a problem. I think that is the issue. And I think that the supervision of the succession. So I know that Nehmet committee tells you that in a week to appear to have it by August 1st. I don't know where it is. But again, but I do believe it's always political administration. Secondly, it is the issue of, in the first one, it is the issue that property is in the form and content. That is the form where the structure and the content they are going to do the work. The human response or the reporting part that is one. The second one is the political part. I do think that there is more than the collaboration to account. But of course, as indicated earlier on, this tends to be taken upon by the social network and for collaboration, especially within the ruling party, to the extent that the law of committee the ruling party is including the rather of sharing, which brings the added dimension of sharing a committee where how we manage this, what extent we're still able to ensure that the committee is still able to function in the manner that they are not reducing to the public that cannot operate outside the position of the public. So those are two things, but I'm saying that the political dynamics play a role, and the fact that the effort is now over time. It's fine and good, but to what extent is this a transient phenomenon informed by the most superficial community? But to what extent is this a cautious and permanent feature that is true to the position parameters of the community? So I think it is that to have a direct disruption is very important. The extent to which committees are able to.
What can we tell you?
The challenge of sharing equipment unlike other systems, they come from another country. We are able to wear them, I think, when we need to know but at the political level, they are not giving you a guarantee that you may not see the next one. So you may want to call but it appears that the road is not in that straight of lane. To what extent does a minister call the certain group and complain about it and that has an impact in terms of the ABC or the ABC? To what extent does that impact on the road in terms of the level check if they didn't want to do it? So those are political dynamics over which, in my context, you have to deal with, but also the context of other committees, I think, upon broadly, and the notion that necessarily a constitutional legislation shouldn't have fraud.
There is nowhere in any democracy where you find the executive empowering members of parliament. You can't find it anywhere. Members of parliament empower themselves. And issues that have been raised about the administration of parliament are issues that have been there since 1994. We said there should be a paradigm shift in the Pope of God with regard to the administration of parliament, because you had a situation where the staff of parliament was running members of parliament. And we had to do away with that system to say staff of parliament is at the service of members. And that was very clear, we made it very clear, they had to understand that. Because once you don't do that, then you're going to encounter the problems that you have been talking about. You see, the staff not understanding that they are there because of members. Without members, they can't work, they can't do anything. It's as fundamental as that. So all these issues about the budget of committees, who's running those budgets and whatever, emanates from that structure. And once it flows, there is nothing that you can do. So as members, that's the starting point. That is the starting point. And I am happy that this one has been raised very sharply. My experience has been there is no way in which the executive can assist members to implement the provisions of the Constitution. They can't. Because they don't always want to have a way of maintaining a situation where they will always be more informed than members. I'll quote an instance where Constitution, the transitional constitution, where they said the secretary to the legislature should be appointed by the executive. But it was at the same time saying that there should be separation of powers. How do you have separation of powers when the secretary to the legislature is appointed by the executive? Comrade Vanu was still was a minister in the Constitutional Affairs Committee. We approached him and he said, no, there's nothing wrong with that constitution. There's nothing, we see nothing wrong, and the premiers of province were agreeing with it. You see, until we insisted that if this clause is not amended, then there are no legislature. You see, it has to be amended. So this why I'm saying if the executive doesn't want the constitution, they must say so. We don't want that constitution. But if the constitution exists, it is supreme law.
and members must see to it that the constitution is implemented. I don't think there is any argument about that. But the mechanisms of doing that, I think those are the ones that become political. So, also the question that I want to raise with regard to the financial management of Parliament. We dealt with that piece of legislation when I was still in Speaker's Forum. I thought it had long been passed. Because the problems then were the power relations between the Secretary and the Speaker. I don't know what is the position now. But that was the problem with that piece of legislation. And as to whether there can be one legislation for Parliament and for the province. So if members can pass a legislation that will empower themselves, then there is a problem. Because how do you hold the Secretary of Parliament to account if there is no legislation doing that? Where do you start? Because sometimes like I read that he refused to account to Spoffer, saying that he accounts to Parliament, not to the Committee of the National Assembly. Technically, he was right. Because there's no law saying as to where he should account, how he should account. So those are the issues that I wanted to play. And the issue of oversight, I think the constitutional provisions are peremptory with regard to that. They don't give the Parliament the discretion. They say there must be a motive for holding the executive accountable. Also with regard to passing that financial management of Parliament, Parliament must develop a model to run its internal arrangements. Those are peremptory clauses, and those are issues that obstruct that need to be in place for Parliament to function effectively. Well, the other issues, I think, are relationship problems, and no one raised the issue of power relations between the presiding officers, the presiding officer in the National Assembly and the NCOP. Those were issues that were grappling with, because there was no model for cooperative governance, and there was this question of saying, no, the National Assembly can't go to provinces for oversight visits and should be the NCOP. And it seems these are the issues that you are still grappling with. You see, this is 11 years down the line. So I think there must be an honest thing by chairperson of committee to say, let's deal with this issue. Because there is no way that you are going to have an effective parliament when you are having this cheating problem that should have been addressed long ago. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes,
Councilor
Cameron.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My lady, I have this feeling of the deja vu.
Seems as though I've had it
before. I don't have the details. But just a couple of points I'd like to raise. One is the issue of the administrative issues. Once upon a time, I can remember, we had a lot of money in Parliament, and for some reason it was never quite spent. Seems to be more money than you needed, but you had no money because you couldn't access the funds. There was some problem. I didn't quite understand what the problem was then. Maybe now there's some solution to this problem. So there is money, but it's kind of like it's the money.
Yeah.
And every time we grappled with this issue, and we thought maybe, you know, our Democrats are very young. Democrats, he's a teenager now. Democrats are taking me in. Some of the things, clearly there should be a solution to them. I mean, you know, we shouldn't have one for 13 years. Simple issue, there is budget, there is money. They were giving that money from donors that had to be sent back.
because we wouldn't spend the money. Now, that's the major indictment on any parliament. Morally, it's not right for our parliament to be asking money from donors. Morally, it can't be right. We have our own resources. We should be, I think, strict on this one. We don't want donor money. We have our own resources. And the Treasury must provide, we the taxpayer, are not happy, but we have no choice to provide the money for parliament as taxpayers. So the money should be there and money should be used. All you need to do is to account for it properly. But that should not be unheard of. The only parliament in the world that can access its own money. That's a problem. The second issue I have is, I know there is no personalities, etc., but you know, I happened to visit Parliament. I was a chief whip once upon a time. So I visited the British Parliament, and I was happy that they offered me an opportunity to sit in their own caucus of the Labour Party at the time. And the issue of personality was simply about 1 or 2 weeks that didn't want to listen to the chief whip. But, you know, listening to people say that our personality progress in Parliament should be an issue. I mean, can't be. These are parliamentarians. You've got your own right to say what you want to say. I mean, you know, so that can't be an issue. Doesn't matter who it is. In Britain, they told me that there was only one person with a personality program. And they gave the statue after him. And that was Winston Churchill. Now, I'm not sure why we have that program here. We are not Winston Churchill here. The third issue I'd like to raise, which has been a concern for me, is the unintended consequences of the legislation, the law that we passed. I'm not sure where we sit to make sure that the laws we pass run across. If I'm in a portfolio committee, and my focus is only on that legislation coming from government or the legacy, but I don't look around to say what are the long-term unintended consequences of any legislation. You know the situation where you've got to go back and amend, go back and amend, go back and amend. Not clearly, I just keep on amending our own legislation. These are unintended consequences. I'm not sure what structures we are putting in place to make sure that we don't have these unintended consequences of any legislation. And the other one is, coming as we do now, you know, as panelists, it should be to hear from yourselves, and I think every my life, I think this has been a very useful session for us, very frank, very open, and very useful. What I like is, what is your solution? I hear the gripe, I hear the problem, but you know, after 15 years, surely you must come with some solution. It might not be a solution. It might be some document, whatever. What we want to do here is learn from you, listen to you, but come up with proposals. Come up with proposals. What is that we need to do? What are we doing right? We should comment. What are we not doing right? We should make change. We want to be the best parliament in the world, and for one reason only, we are the best. And we can't be any better parliament than ours, but we are. We're putting it together. So, sometime down the line, if you have this concrete proposal that hopefully we'll be able to take from you and incorporate in some report, say, these are the things that we need to look at and how we want to do it. And also, wearing my other hat, the political hat, Jeremy. I'm sure some of these things can also filter into the process of debate and discussion between the political parties themselves. I mean, democracy is not a one-sided thing, it involves everybody. And so what is that you want to put in the political agenda of the political party about the role of parliament, the role of democracy, and the role of, you know, all the institutions that we have created?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for being late. I haven't got so much into it, so I've got to be very supportive. But I've been listening with great interest, and I must also commend the chair of the committee for their frankness. It seems to me the fascinating was some of the comments made by members of the chairperson. I'll just give you one or two examples. Mr. Sosada, even when facts contradict the position of a party spokesperson, the party will overwhelmingly support the spokesperson. Then Mr. Longacito said that it's a matter of power. The view of the executive prevails. Said, because we do not have power, we are not taken seriously. For example, if we do have an influence over money going, then the South African Revenue Service should take the case and give us much more money. And Chairperson for Safety and Security, Mikey, said somebody else is going to do this on this money. And then the last one that I would like to take, not sure whether it's purely an administrative problem or a political problem. Then he's all, Parliament can do more to hold the executive to account. Now, I must say, I find these frank statements both disturbing and encouraging. And I say so because I look at them within the context of a constitutional democracy, and a number of members have referred to in which the separation of powers are held to be very, very important. And the fact that the chairpersons can raise these issues concerning the independence or the relative independence of parliament in relation to the executive, I think is very encouraging. But it's also disturbing because it underpins, as I listen carefully, a trend to which one more or less assumes. There was an passionate appeal, I think, here towards the end, that Parliament must empower itself. The executive will not empower Parliament. Now, there is a bit of a chicken and egg problem. If Parliament hasn't got any resources, I can empower itself. And I think one of the issues that I got very interested in say was party. Have a responsibility to debate these issues within the party. So I think there is that you don't really need new seats of contributing to parliamentary debate. I raise these issues, Chair, just to make the point that as a member of the panel, our duty is to evaluate the performance of parliament against the constitutional description of debate. But in that regard, I found this morning's contributions of the story. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let me also join my colleagues in also indicating that the agenda which in fact is a presentation of the approach also reflects what we call a sense of maturity and the instance of what I call optimism, and which is something that in the past or the public view of public has been that of trying to protect the process. But I should also indicate that what Jeremy also said, despite all the crash, that the public image of parliament is really changed. There's a certain sense of something that is positive, that whether it has to do with the time of the time of the thing, but the fact that there have been members of the executive have been questioned. I mean, I do remember the health changes that have been undergone. The comments that also have coming from Parliament and from the Constitutional Committee were suggesting that the people are beginning to take their job seriously. And I've also been had an opportunity of being part of the NTOP conference where they were celebrating their 10 years of existence. And one of the fascinating things was the
sense of the camaraderie and the comradeship within the various social parties, where people within that felt that they had a role to play. And in a sense, one of the interviews, one of the members of the IP, that when I go out there, and the government fails, they also include me, because they see me as part of the government. So there is a almost dislike that was always appreciated when they say what is called red-handed. It has also been made quite difficult by the bureaucracy that today the comrades is on the other side of the thing, your comrades are with you. So it has been led to a certain level of only a shock that is a certain colleague might be a minister. So anyway, be that as may, I would like to go back to the issues of grants. And that I was trying to think that when people say we've had it before, the question comes to what have you done about it. And I would have thought that what would be interesting is for people to indicate, especially from the perspective of where the government has set up this mandate, as the envisaged by the constitution, is to try to find some of those positive things that the regional get. I mean, one of them is the level of maturity. Is the possibility when it comes to the economic forum for deliberation. But also to look at to try to put away the problem within the structure, even the structure, people must indicate what part of the structure is positive. If it is in the system, they must actually indicate what part of it, so that we can find the solution around the issue. If it's about the processing, if it's about skills, people must be able to pinpoint and then be able to put some timeline. They say what the type of action that is required. If it's an issue, what issue? But at the moment, what we do, we have there is no structured way that has actually emerged. But once they actually see where the things are located, but it becomes very important so that we should not say the same thing again. We should actually say, this is what we have actually done. But I also like the point that you're saying that you do not normalize, that you do not know any executive anywhere in the world where it has gone out of its way to empower that body that is supposed to hold it accountable. So in a sense, some of this could also be something that we must be channel to ourselves, that we are part of the problem. And yes, you may take it to the issues of other parties, but that it must be acknowledged too. This parliament should be saying, this is where we have actually faced, and these are the issues that could be addressed, and these are the timelines. And so once you do that, you make it even measurable, rather than to provide a sense of it. Because we came here, maybe we're hoping not to get all the cash, and we're hoping to say, hear that these are shortcomings, this is what we've actually done. But in a sense, you've actually provided more of a holistic, so that when we think about this, it should also be, you provided the context of what we have implemented. And Jeremy was hoping that Sante was going to raise the issue of the local system, but I think Temba Gozi sort of touched it. but there should be an element when you talk about the public representatives, to what extent are those people who may not have voted for your party accommodated? Because especially in a context where you have where the voter turnout is low, when 50% of the people may not are not voting, are you saying you're only going to be concerned about those who voted the party? What about the other people? So we have a responsibility. They can, is there a way we can hear them? And the issue of whether the system that we have does assist us. I mean, there are questions. I'm not saying that we need to change the system. I'm simply saying, is there, can there be an improvement that can create a greater sense of accountability? There are positive things that are in the system, one, making sure that every postcode comes, that small parties are represented, that it is simple, that many people can about it, all those things. But many people have indicated, even those who supported, that the element of accountability, at least to the public, is zero. not there strong enough. So we need to find a way in which that we can get it. But what should happen is that there must be a systemic and systematic approach into the successes, into the freedom, and into the timeline in terms of the resolution. And then the parliament can get the support of all of us in this country to say, these are the things that these guys want to be able to do the work. But at the moment, we are not able to.
That's a practical problem. It's almost 1 o'clock. And we're supposed to break for lunch and then reconvene at 2. And then from 2 to 3, the panel's supposed to be meeting to look at some of the internal working and make the decision. And then the NCAP meeting starts from 3 to 4:30. And many of the panel then will be catching flights possibly in time. We have for three members of the panel, Jeff Deutsch wants to raise some points of clarity, and we need to then conclude this particular session. Can I suggest that we go for another 15 minutes, and that the official members will be speaking from the panel side and Jeff Deutsch keep as brief as possible so that as concise as possible so that we can conclude at 1:15. Is that acceptable? John Chamber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be as brief as I can. I'd like to begin by reiterating what some of my colleagues said and thanking the various chairpersons being so frank and open with us. It's really been a very, very useful and probably the most useful session the panel has had this week, not been. So my thanks to all of the chairpersons. But unfortunately that thanks comes with a price, which is it has whetted my appetite for more. And I say that with 2 points in mind. Firstly, I'd like to endorse what Max Susan said. I do think it would be very helpful for us if we could get some sort of consensus proposal from the chairperson that the panel could then evaluate. And if we found this appropriate, we would then be able to send forward some of our report forward and appendix to that report. I think that would certainly help us enormously. And the second point is we've heard a great many gripes, I think the word was used this morning. But, and this is where my appetite for more has been whetted, not to hear all about the rights. I think those have been adequately covered. But I would like to have at some stage another session between the panel and the various leaders of the committee to explore some of the issues that have been touched on, which we have not discussed because there's been no time. One is the critical question of unintended consequences. And what role committee or enhanced role committee can play in looking at that. I have a whole series of issues that I think are relevant to the more effective performance of committees as critical institutions in Parliament that have not been touched on by anybody. They've arisen in some of the reading I've done, and I would like to have an opportunity to explore some of those at a later stage, perhaps when the panel has had more time to think and more time to discuss with various other people, that I think a subsequent session with as many people from the committee that we have throughout this morning would be very helpful to us. I'd like to help them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to the chairman for their openness. Just because I'm surprised, actually, thank you so much and repeated. In our previous engagement with other members of Parliament, we still stay open and friendship. I think it would be polite not to pause at this point, given the fact that I'm saying, repeated some of the things we said. If there's anything you want to ignore, it might not give that opportunity now. For me, the first issue
start on the wheel of the people. I don't think we can do that today. But I would have liked to get a sense from the shepherds about their understanding of the will of the people, what constitutes the will of the people, and whether in what parliament has been doing since the advent of democracy has been consistent with that will of the people, and whether our chosen electoral system an electoral system that gives effect to that will of the people. But also, I would have liked to engage with the Shepherdson with issues of how, for instance, that will of the people is constructed. In part, it is constructed through an election. And in a sense, parties come here to represent the will of constituency and not completely the will of the people. And I would have liked to ask Shepherdson the extent to which the different parties, the different members of parliament, are able to transcend the will of their constituency. For instance, if you are a minority party, are you able to take on board the will of the majority party? Because that position of the majority party actually constitutes the will of the people on that particular part. And whether if you are a majority party, you are able to take on board the position of minority party, because that position of the minority party on that particular issue actually constitutes the will of the people. I will just go into the principles and how that is consistent or not consistent with the will of the people. Except to say that how do we deal with situations where the position of the party, even the constitutional position at times, or the parliamentary position is at variance with the will of the people. How do we manage those tensions when they do arrive, and how should we manage them? On the strength or weakness of political parties, I think political parties manifest themselves and express themselves in different ways, and therefore their strengths and their weaknesses too manifest themselves and express themselves in different ways. So there are contexts in which the political party is weak, and there are contexts in which the political party is strong. For instance, the political party is both the source of weakness and the source of strength when it comes to certain issues of public parliament. The executive can prevail and can do so because the source of its power at that particular point is the political party, which means then members of parliament belong to that party are weak at that point precisely because the party is people have spoken about the robustness of engagement with communities of faith. I think the issue that I'm saying is the government is better. We need to ask whether this robustness is not a function of the actions that we care about in a particular political party. The robustness is welcome. And one hopes that it's not going to be an ephemeral phenomenon, that it is going to be a phenomenon that outlasts the actions that I'm talking about. On the issue of capacity, I suspect 20 years from now, we'll see Kenya will be bemoaning the lack of capacity. I would have liked them to talk about whether it's not important to be realistic about available capacity and capacity that is likely to be available in the future. And be much more realistic also about how we set priorities. The current situation is that we allow departments to impose priorities on parliament. So that checklist in the oversight process is a checklist action that is imposed by departments on parliament. And that raises other issues about whether citizens are policy initiators,
whether group priorities are set, where they should be set, and how Parliament should relate to those priorities. And finally, a question for you. Is it the experience of parliamentarians that national treasure is the state to give a state? That's the first thing. And secondly, is it the experience of members of parliament that the budget is the same that where your policy is on? Thank you.
Begin by saying that I'm happy that the panelists had this opportunity to interact with the chairperson. I see there are 8 panelists here. Normally I'm alone every week and I have to face this barrage. But I must say that when it comes to how committees function and the leadership initial of those committees is here this morning. I have to take my hat off to the kind of dedication and passion that I see people undertake their constitutional mandates with these committees. They're very serious about their work. And I think it's good that we continuously look at the institution, continuously look at how we function, we continuously look at the support that we have. I think that's good. I don't think there's a problem with that. And we have to keep on improving. But I think the aspect of the project that are outstanding, and maybe it would have been with a bit of hindsight, it would have been good to have given this meeting a sense of some of the other work that's going on besides the oversight model. That is the role and the positioning of Parliament. I think the panel has had benefit of this meeting, Professor Guto, but I think there is also the task team that looks at work in the presiding offices for the Montenegro Commission that came out very clear about some of the things that are lacking. The point Dr. Kuman raised about the Speaker of Parliament is there, the proposal is there. Mr. Papello's document on oversight and accountability makes a proposal for an additional 900 members of staff for members of Parliament. There are other challenges, whether we have the resources, whether we have the space, it goes hand in glove. But I think that is an important piece of work that I think the panel will have to get somebody in on the substage. Because it's very important that we, in fact, look at that work that is already on record. I agree that, and also, I must say that the positioning of the legislative arm at all spheres results in some of the issues that you've heard that you might think are gripes. That is as a result. If you don't position the legislative arm correctly, you're never going to address all the other things. You can't have a Secretary of Parliament whom you think is a DG, is earning a DG salary, when in fact you find out that he doesn't earn a DG salary, and the salary levels are therefore affected throughout the entire institution, right down to your very basic levels of staff. So, and who would not want a staff member from Parliament when you've been schooled here for 13 years, you know Parliament backwards? Any ministry would want you, of course. People are poaching our staff, left, right, and center. Dr. Gabriel, the head of research, has lost good staff. Daniel Lemene from the head of committee has lost valuable staff in the recent days, not even weeks. I also poached from their staff. But the point is that they are a breeding ground for very competent people. Now that's unfortunately because of a number of things. If we don't get the positioning correct in terms of what the Constitution says, I think the Constitution is clear. But whether that's being implemented, I don't think is the case. So that to me is the problem. I think also there are some very other challenges that we have in terms of cooperative governance, the second house, the provinces, the local sphere. It's not just simple. When you look at the competencies of committees, sometimes they cascade to lower level, provincial level, sometimes even to local level. We have to take those things into account, and I think those are some of the serious challenges we have. I think also we must realize that there is an unequal relationship between the executive and parliament. It goes back to the role and positioning of parliament in my own simple mind. Because if we don't get that right, you're forever going to be on the lesser level. I think, again, Berman, you are correct. Besides, and I don't think we must be sidetracked by the frustrations we've heard today. The frustrations are very real. I don't think we must undermine the frustrations that have been tabled. But I think at the same time, there's some very good best practices that have been developed in committees in this parliament. And I don't think we can throw the baby out with the bathwater as far as that's concerned. I think also, Chair, there are a number of aspects that we need to deal with in terms of oversight. Oversight doesn't only happen at committee level. It happens at an individual level. It happens in your constituencies, and we haven't spoken about constituencies. We haven't spoken about Parliament's democracy offices that it attends over. I think when it comes to plenary, we need to say how much executive time, how much members' time. Question time is members' time. Statements is members' time. I think we need to look at where we find the balance. I also think that, and I think Aubrey is correct, whilst we can, and we do understand commitment, it's still with us by millions, hundreds of millions. And that's a reality. I think the important thing for us is to look at how we plan as committees. And that is something that we're working very hard on. To try and get our planning, our prioritization, optimal utilization of time. It really goes, it get goes down to a fine art when you think of this particular institution has over 50 committees with a limited number of committee rooms with limited resources. You've got to sit down and begin to prioritize about something. It can't just be for all that, you know, demands and resources that we might need, because even in my office I functioned since 2004 with no staff until recently, 2 months ago, some of staff. So, and the positions are still not all filled, but the work has continued. But I think it's also important that there is work that is going on within committees that would respond to some of Professor Jirke's questions. Unfortunately not, but I think maybe we need to find another case of time to engage. But I think the issue, and Comrade Godfrey will even discuss it, the relationship between the executive we haven't grappled with substantially. I think it's an outstanding issue. I think there is confusion in our own minds sometimes what is executive accountability and what is the accountability that we expect from the accounting officer. I think those things need to be taken into account. I think the support models to committees, as Mr. Menes said, will be phased in, but I think it's important to note that there are also other challenges there. The skills that we are looking for are not there. They received thousands of CVs the first time around. There was hardly anybody that they could even start the process with. So you start the process all over again. Parliament salaries are a problem, and if we want the specialized skills that we need in this institution, I think there are a few other things up the ladder that need to change to facilitate that process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Technical
to all chairpersons for participating so vigorously in the panel session today. I think it's been just to reiterate the panel members' responses that it's very important to have such strength input from yourself. And it will go a long way in terms of what the panel's final response is. I think I'd like also to reiterate points that have been made by several panel members that it would be really useful, because I think there are, I don't think that the question has just been addressed. I think there have been very specific proposals that have been contained in various inputs, and I think those need to be crystallized and put forward to the panel so that we can actually utilize it in our report. Those range from the money goal, how to deal with the money goals, and to ensure time frames, how to use power as effectively as possible in relation to all of these different areas. I think there have been very specific proposals being put forward, and those need to be crystallized, and they need to be consensus within the chairpersons around those so that they can be utilized to take forward what's been raised. I think the issue of rollover funds at this point in time of hundreds of millions is utterly unacceptable in terms of the kinds of needs that you've identified, in terms of the question of the priority that needs to be addressed in terms of society. So it would be very valuable, invaluable for the panel to get such a report, a consolidated report from the chairperson that could assist us to emerge with a report that doesn't just talk about the theoretical problems, but puts it into the practical realities that you face to be able to do the work that you are trying to do. And then sitting here and thinking as you were talking that, for example, the U.S., which was given as an example, when I visited there, I think it was 96 parts of public representation, I discovered that every public representative there has about 20 full-time staff who are professionals and who deal with everything from research to media to communication, etc. So the issue of the end, I think what we're saying is, how do you deal with it well in terms of the kind of resources that this public needs to have, and yes, and to ensure effective deployment of those resources. I think the central question of power is one that the chairs have to also assert in terms of the constitution. And I think that the issue is the power is there. The power is called as well. And the question is for the chairperson to actually assert that power and to come together, I think, because one of the issues also is of how to prioritize, not to be driven by the checklist of priorities that comes from the executive, but to identify the priorities yourself as chairperson and parliament. What are the priorities of going actually to go about these things? So you aren't driven in the way in which you are, and are not able to then give a check to the real priorities. So I think thank you very much for the panel side. It was a rich engagement with yourself, but I hope that it won't be the last, and we will actually get further input from the chairperson. Thank you very much. Okay, then, please. Further ahead. Going into the lunch, so that's fine.
I'm so sorry. I just wanted to know what is that on the screen?
I have no idea what that is on the screen.